Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
It is Dukes and Bell. Thanks to our newest Falcons for jumping on the show with us in the first hour. If you missed those interviews, again, download the app, guys, and go rewind. We'll play some of that for you a little bit later on in the show. But, Mike, all three impressive, right? All three.
Right. I was saying a lot of guys hitting us up on the text line. You always reach out to us. Carl's put him up. See Dukes on Mike Bell, ATL. But everyone who heard the interviews, especially Xavier Watts, really got people fired up. And Billy Bowman comes out of the block swinging. So we'll replay it for you as part of our Falcon Report in 2 hours' time. If you missed it, don't forget the Odyssey app. Bloop, you can rewind. But, yeah, it's just fun to hear these guys, you know, just starting their journey, the rookie mini camp. And then I can't – I mean, again, I told you I was going to be the hype man, but now I'm really hyped. I can't wait to be up there at camp.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun, man. Look, hope.
It's a good thing, Carl.
It's what we need.
Maybe one of the best things.
It's what we need, man. You got to have some hope. Penix gives us that, right? These new draft picks give us more hope. Guys, I'm going to tell you, half the draft class we didn't see last year gives me hope. I don't know what Trice is. I'm serious. Like, there's reason to believe, okay, some of these guys are going to pop. I'll say this, though, as we get the hour started, guys. And, of course, this hour is brought to you by our friends at All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. The Panthers are releasing Jadeveon Clowney. Now, the only reason I bring this up is because if we hadn't done what we've done, you guys would be clamoring, saying, Dukes and Bell, we got to go get Jadeveon Clowney. The answer's a hard no.
No.
Okay?
No. Not this year.
But
not
we're
this
past
year.
That, Mike.
Yeah.
We got
yeah.
two young guys. I don't know if both of them are going to be great, but we've got two young guys now. We can hang our hat on and say, hey, let's grow with these guys. Let's see what they're going to be. We think they both can be good. Let's all this talk about going to get veteran guys that are 35 or old. We're done with that, okay? So I just want to put that out there. Please do not tweet or text us about Jadeveon Clowney being let go by the Panthers.
We had guys yesterday literally asking us about, why are we going for George Pickens? Come on, guys. I mean, it's like all you guys know are like the Madden games, you know? Like, come on. Jadeveon Clowney, like, he's a good piece. If by chance, heaven forbid, something happened to Leonard Floyd or other injuries ensued and he's still out there, yes. But right now, no. I mean, we are pretty set right now at edge. I mean, we've got a lot of guys. Now, if there's a defensive tackle who gets released, that's a different conversation for me. Is that one for you?
Well, it is. But
depending on the price, of course.
Correct. It depends on who it is. But I just feel like, you know, we've lived this. This has been our nightmare the last few years.
Yeah, we're not. Again, Leonard Floyd is here because he still put up some great numbers. I know there was some, you know, buyer's remorse after, you know, Matthew Judon just didn't pan out. But I'm just pretty cool with right now what we've got in the rotation. So, no, that's a hard pass for me at this stage of his career.
All right, guys, hit us up, 404-726-0929. Lots of stuff going on. We got to talk about last night's NBA stuff. Now, the Braves, we hit on that to start the hour, last hour, and if you missed it, just a questionable decision by Snit. Doesn't make him a bad guy. He's a great manager. But in these moments where, you know, our team is fighting very hard, it feels like, for every win, and again, we are over 500 since starting 0-7, but that was just one of those questionable moments. We'll get back to that. But, Mike, let's talk about what happened, because the Celtics right now are the talk of the NBA. They're the talk of the country simply because they've blown back-to-back 20-point leads. Now, I said to you the other day, I blame Tatum, right, because I thought he's the guy that has the ability to say, calm down, give me the ball, I've got this. But he was bad last night. And when you are continuing to shoot threes, they were 10 of 40 last night. They missed 45 threes in the first game. Mike, they don't have a way to get to a set play to get an easy bucket.
Yeah, and it is kind of crazy. Vegas had both the Celtics and the Thunder at 10.5-point favorites. And I said, at the end of the show yesterday,
I tell you?
Vegas figures these guys are just going to come back. All right, enough horsing around. We're going to drop the hammer. Well, the Thunder did just that. They absolutely destroyed the Nuggets. I mean, blew them out of the building. The Celtics did the same thing. Got up to a nice lead. And now, all right, guys, we got a lead. Let's now not let the Knicks in. Did you learn nothing from game one? And if you didn't see the post game, Joe Mazzulla, I know it's cliche to say on Sports Talk Radio, he looked like a deer in headlights who got hit by the truck. I mean, he had nothing. I mean, he's like mumbling and just kind of, I thought, you know, Tatum got a good look. We look for that play. And if you go back and you look at how they defended that, how about Mitchell Robinson on Tatum? putting him away from the basket.
It was great.
And then the wing players come in, and they collapse on him, and now he doesn't know what he's doing. So I just thought the Knicks played – like one thing about Thibodeau, if he doesn't wear him in the ground, you know defensively, Carl, in the half court, they always have a plan.
He's always been that dude. And Mike, here's what I'm getting to with this, because I know some of you are like, man, they played like this, and they won all year. When this is your only style of play, you don't have any other way to calm yourself down in these moments. And I'll explain. The Bulls did this with the triangle. So did the Lakers. They had a way to say, you know what? We need to relax a little bit. They're going on a run. We can go inside, Michael. We can run a set play for Mike or Kobe, whatever it was. You know what the Celtics set play is? Come down, shoot a three. That's it.
How'd they lose to the Nuggets in five, by the way?
But when you play like that, it's, I'm constantly going, right, Mike, and you don't have a way to just slow down. Even the Tatum bucket before the end of the game where he gets to the rack on an illegal screen and dunks it, that was just one of those, I got to get a slow down.
No, there's no poise. And look, I get it. He gets the big bucks, and he is the dude, but not because he's a hometown kid. Jalen Brown's tougher.
He's a better player.
Jalen Brown is mentally tougher than Jason Tatum. You saw it. I mean, in Jason Tatum's comments after they finally won it, they did some of this to a degree against the Nuggets in the finals a couple years ago too, if you remember.
Blowing leads.
Playing without poise.
Yes.
So, I mean, this and that, you know, to me is a DNA thing. So, yes, I get it. You know, this is how you get to the playoffs. Playoff basketball is different, and Missoula's going to have to pivot. Because this is, I mean, you got some of the greatest players in the NBA on one team. You got great depth. You got worker bees like Horford. You got Porzingis coming off the bench. You got everything.
You got everything.
And you blow it. And the Knicks, by the way, are buoyed by this. Madison Square Garden is going to be insane. Okay? Spike Lee might be like literally on the floor. I mean, it's going to be bananas because you've just, and the Celtics have put themselves in this hole with just bad decision making.
Well, Mike, here's the thing. He had a timeout and didn't burn it at the end of that game. Here's the other part. He said we wanted to run the same play, which tells me you didn't have anything.
Right.
You got to call a timeout right there. This is a must-have bucket. You've just blown a 20-point lead. Instead, you're doing this, Mike. You're rolling your hand around like, let's run it again.
Right.
And then you don't get anything. So, to your point, that's Missoula, and that's why. Look, they lose this series, he should be fired. And I don't care they just won a championship.
Right.
Because this window that the Celtics have, Mike, and you and I both know, these windows close quickly. They're supposed to be good for the next 5 years with Brown and Tatum in their prime and the accessories they have around them. All of a sudden, you won one, you're about to blow one, and everybody assumes next year things will be fine. Guess what? Injuries always play. And then you're 2 years away from a championship, 3 years. If he loses this series, I'd fire him.
Me too. Like, Ime Udoka was the brains of the operation. You and I, I've been saying it for years. You give him a pass because they won it last year, but obviously, you know, you make these decisions and you're like, what? I mean, a child, somebody who's playing youth basketball would say, well, that's not really, maybe just try to get a layup there, you know? But in the case of the Celtics, so now what? You're going to reinvent your game plan?
No.
You're going to go into the garden and try to get physical? You know, and again, and depending on how the refs call it, good luck with that.
Yep.
So now you're kind of over a barrel with this one. You just got to make your shots. And when that's why so many people, and again, it's not like you're going to be like old fart, but if you grew up in a certain era of basketball, I hate the 3-point shot and the way it just makes these games suck. Makes a regular season just clang, run down the other end, clang, and now you're seeing a team die with it. I love it. I love it.
Let's hear the final sequence, guys. This is the Knicks winning, and Mike said it. It was a defensive stop, right? The help on Tatum, and he was lost. He's like, dribble through my legs. Oh, what's the clock?
Where's that going, by the way? Who's he kicking it back to?
I have no idea. I think he was trying to hit Brown, but it was almost like, I don't even know if he knew what he wanted to do. Run a play. Run some screens. Get a guy open, Missoula. Here's the final sequence.
Tatum across midcourt with 10. Top of the key with 8. Defended by Robinson with 7. Right wing 3. Crossover. Foul line with 4. Left block. Step back. Stolen by Bridges. Bridges chucks it down court. They've done it again. They've done it again. The New York Knicks take both in Boston. And a 2-0 lead heading back to the Mecca.
I watched a replay about 10 times, and I don't know if it was just a lousy pick or Mitchell just never got. He just basically slides through, and he's just kind of striding right with him, stride for stride with Tatum. And as we said, you get the backside help, and it's all over.
It was terrible. And now, and I hate to even say this, Mike, because I don't like the Knicks. I hope they beat them. I hope they beat them. Right. I really do.
Well, you know me. I have a love-hate relationship with the Knicks. My father loved and lived and died for the Knicks. Watching Patrick Ewing, Carl, will make you hate the NBA. But you know, Bernard King was my guy. You know how people love. You know how people love Dominique. That's how I am with Bernard King. But anyway, yes, I'm a little excited. It will be interesting to see. But yeah, the Celtics have no. I mean, they're literally they got to go through soul searching. Imagine what our sister station Boston Radio is killing them. They're killing Missoula right now. They're killing Tatum.
And they absolutely should. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hey, we got to talk some NFL, and we will let you know what's going on around the league. Also, we got to hear from Michael Penix Jr., who had a great conversation with our buddy Brian McFadden, who joins us on Fridays, CBS NFL analyst, and does a great podcast. Really, it's one of the best one-on-ones that we've seen with Michael Penix, and certainly the access that he got to just kind of hang out and chop it up with him, man. So we'll play some of that for you coming up here on the show. And then tomorrow, B-Mac's going to join us to discuss what he learned about Michael Penix. I mean, look, I think what you see is what you get, right? And that is, he's never too excited, he's never too high, he's never too low. But I also think that sometimes that's mistaken for, like, is he completely all in? Is he focused? And I don't know if that's a fair assessment. I think Michael Penix is doing everything he can to prepare himself for this upcoming season. He knows how big it is, but we're going to play some of that stuff for you, including working with Matt Ryan and, you know, on the Falcons making the playoffs if he started sooner. We played one of those sound bites for you, and he's just, you know, again, he didn't say yeah, but he didn't say no. He understands if he says, well, hell yeah, they should have started me.
Yeah.
Controversy,
well,
right?
Exactly.
Right.
I thought it was, you know, again, first off, Michael Penix Jr., he's not that kind of guy. He was a team captain at Wazoo, and he knows how to play the game. Not his first time in front of a camera. But, I mean, yeah, you're not going to sit there and be like, yeah, I went to coach and said, this sucker Cousins, he ain't got it. Everybody
he's
knows.
Broke. He's broke.
Everybody knows he's broke down, noodle arm, can't step in the pocket. Get me in there. Put a win. My name is Billy Beeman.
Yeah.
Keep the ladies, Eddie, get the idea, Steve. Yeah, man. He's not going to go Willie Beeman any given Sunday, but I mean, there's almost in a way I wish he would.
I do too. That's what I was saying. But that's all on the way. And also, we'll get
my
to
time. That yeah, Buster's man, no days man is done.
Yeah. Bomb. Yeah. Right. Exactly. If he would have said that, you
it's
know?
MPJ day.
All day, every day. But he didn't say that.
J-Day's shaking his head back there.
Because it'd be great. I mean, like, you all are laughing, but can you imagine? Like, seriously, like, yeah, I was sitting on the sidelines week after week, seeing this man throw interception after interception.
Boom.
And I couldn't take it. I went to coach, but he was like, no, wait your turn. So it's my turn now.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be great, though, J-Day? He gets up on the table, you know, at Waffle House, and like, drop to zero, get with the hero.
Well, we're going to have a chance to do that.
What's
and,
funny is the Waffle House setting was the perfect place for him
great
to do that.
It was great. Right. It was great. More people were commenting on that
right
to me than
yeah
anything else. They're like, Duke's there at Waffle House. How perfect. But yeah. That,
well, you thank B-Mac and his people. They put it together.
No, it's good stuff. All right. That's on the way, guys. Also, RG3 talking about Shedeur Sanders. Pretty interesting stuff. I don't know if I agree with it, but I understand where he's coming from. We'll get into that as well.
Right,
man.
It's one of those debates you and I were having the other day
yeah
about where how it all works out.
Yeah, we'll dive into that. Lots of stuff in store, including more on our draft picks who joined us in the first hour of the show. All three rookies, guys: Xavier Watts, Jack Nelson, the big offensive lineman out of Wisconsin, and Billy Bowman out of Oklahoma. More on them as well. It's Dukes and Bell. It is Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Coming up, Dede's got Yeah Man, No Man. Mike, what did you just tell me about Spencer Strider? What's going on?
Apparently, he's going to wait to talk to the media about his throwing session, according to Mark Bowman from MLB.com.
What, they don't want to push it?
I guess. Strider asked to wait until tomorrow to talk about today's side session. The Braves say they want to make sure he feels good tomorrow before talking about it.
Hmm.
So, again, as we said, I know we live in this sort of like, I want to know now. Actually, I want to know yesterday. When is Strider returning? When is Ronald Acuna coming back?
That's right.
And I can't give an answer to either one of those. And well, I guess they want Strider to. Now, again, if he feels tight, I guess he don't want that news getting out. I don't know.
Okay. And I mean, he might say that because Strider just doesn't care. I mean, he talks the way, you know, about situations. And sometimes he overanalyzes things. We've talked about it. But maybe he's not 100. I don't know.
But either way, I mean, like, I think they're acutely aware of how people, you know, perceive those responses, to your point, because he is rather, you know, outspoken and honestly spoken. So we'll see. But I mean, look, if he feels, if he says he's tight, then okay, then add another 2 weeks. I mean, who freaking knows? You know, I don't know, man. Like, we lived in a world where guys chew every 4 days, and it was four guys, and it wasn't a big deal. And now we have the five and the six and this and that. And ever since Strasburg, see, these are things. Two things that just rub me the wrong way. The candy ass pitchers out there, not that Stride is one of those.
Okay.
Because we know he's tough. But I mean, how the hell, I still don't understand how he jacked up his hamstring having a catch in the outfield. You know, I mean, I already ranted about the 3-point shot, but anyway, just hope he's fine and he feels good.
I do too. We'll see what the latest is when he speaks tomorrow. Hey, man, let's talk some NFL and get to 4th and 1. It's brought to you by our friends at Priority Men's Medical Centers. Check them out at PriorityMen'sMedical.com. All right, as we talked about Michael Penix visiting with our buddy Brian McFadden, B-Mac's going to join us on the show tomorrow. I want you to hear him talk about the game-tying touchdown throw to Pitts. We've discussed this. We've talked about those moments of that's impressive, small window. He has to put the ball in one spot, and he was able to do that. But listen to Michael Penix talk about this moment.
I'm reading my bender, so I know I have two high safeties, so I'm reading my bender. Just got to hold the mic, you know, keep him away from where I want to throw. So I'm looking this way, knowing I'm finna throw it to him, because the window on that side look better than the window.
So pre-snap alignment, because of the two high safeties, look, you already knew where you were trying to go with the football.
Yeah.
You just needed to move that middle linebacker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So once I got the ball in my hand, just, you know, playing the game with my eyes, you know, just make sure, tying my feet and my eyes together, you know, and then
the rhythm.
Just throwing it.
And that thing for me, because that's 4th down.
Yeah.
You don't make that play game over.
Exactly.
For me, when I saw you manipulate the backer, already knowing I'm coming back side, Kyle, when he hit that outside foot ball there.
Yeah.
That right there was like, okay, he cooked it with gas.
See, we've talked about that play specifically a number of times on the show, and there he is breaking it down.
There are guys who've been in the league 8 years, don't do that. He did in his second game. His third game was the Carolina Panthers. He manipulated the Mike linebacker to move him where he wanted him to so he could deliver that throw. That's big time. That's the kind of stuff, again, that either you get and, Mike, you're able to execute, or it takes you a while to do, and sometimes these quarterbacks don't do it. I love the fact that he's talking about that, and he said in his head, I'm going to Pitts, in his mind, the entire time. How I'm going to get there, I got to move this guy. And so that is a big-time throw, man, and that's why I'm very confident, Mike, that as he continues to grow – he's going to do more of these special
right.
things.
And that's why, as I said, it's just like you can't cry for spilt milk. Cousins did some amazing things when he was healthy. You just wish this guy had the full season under his belt. We're going to watch him evolve. He made a terrible mistake with the first interception, but as you just heard Brian and him break it down, he makes a veteran-type move, the kind of things that are next level that John Gruden would talk about in his quarterback camp. I love how you freeze that back or you come right back to your boy right there. You throw that dart in there. That's a tight window. I mean, that's what he does. So I love it. And those are the kind of things. Plus the way, and we've talked about it before, how he went back to Drake London in that Carolina game.
Loved it.
Got him that high point touch score. So, yeah, these are the things that give you the confidence from the conversation we had earlier in the week about just wanting him to be the guy. Doesn't mean he's going to be the guy. You hear things like that. You feel like he's going to be the guy.
You do. You really do. Mike, let's hear RG3, man, talk about Shedeur Sanders. By the way, if you guys didn't hear this, RG3 is working for Fox now. He's going to be in the fall.
Good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's going to be a part of the Big Noon show, I think it is, the college show. Either way, he was talking about Shedeur Sanders. He feels like this situation with the Browns has set Shedeur up for failure.
Oh.
Listen to this.
Oh,
it's absolutely terrible situation for a quarterback to be in. Let's get real, people here. All right? This is the thing that nobody wants to talk about. Shedeur Sanders is in a situation where the NFL and the Cleveland Browns have set him up to sink or swim in year one. What I really mean by that is they set him up to fail. Shedeur Sanders is the 4th quarterback on the Cleveland Browns roster.
Yeah, and this is a conversation we had had, you know, about a week ago. Because, you know, I said it was kind of like a Mike Tyson punch-out. Well, you dispatch Dylan Gabriel. Up next will be Kenny Pickett. And then Flacco is only going to be there a year anyway. So, but as RG3 says, you know, anybody else, you're coming in clearly as number two.
Right.
You battle. You're going to split the reps. I have no idea how the division of labor works in that quarterback room in the preseason. You might not even get to see him until, like, scrub time against the 3rd string.
And then is it a real evaluation? Here's RG3 talking about why he's been set up for failure. This part of it I kind of agree with.
Shedeur Sanders is at a position, a quarterback, where only one guy gets to play. If you're a 5th-round receiver, you got a chance to make the team. You just got to go out there and show out. And a lot of times you're going to get opportunities with the ones and the twos because of injuries, hamstrings, ankles, those type of soft tissue issue injuries that pop up. But at quarterback, that typically doesn't happen. So for Shedeur Sanders, you have to understand that this guy is going to be going into the offseason getting the fewest reps of all the quarterbacks on the Cleveland Browns roster. He's going to be going into training camp getting the fewest reps of all the quarterbacks on the Cleveland Browns roster. And then when you go into the preseason, he's going to be getting the fewest reps right. and the fewest plays of all the quarterbacks on the roster.
Now, again, that's not a hype argument. That's a legitimate fact-based argument. You've seen it. We, you know, part of the reason, you know, last year, unless you're the Falcons, in which case only the third-string quarterback plays basically the preseason. but you're right. He makes a great argument.
He does. And again, unless there is an ownership agenda, which we don't know about, maybe Haslam has an agenda that says, I need to see more of him. Because here's the other part of this, and this is where Shedeur may be favored, where RG3 may be overlooking this. Mike, the hype train has started. He's already got one of the highest selling jerseys, right? People are going to want to see him, and they want to see him early. And so because of that, how much pressure? He's not a first overall pick, but maybe there's a little bit more pressure where he was drafted and with the hype surrounding him that people are going to push for that. And maybe internally that is the case. We do not know. But if RG3 is right about this and they play it by the book, he's right. You're not going to see a whole lot of him. And I don't know how you evaluate him, Mike, when he's playing in these garbage times in the preseason. And there's right. not six preseason games like the 70s. So you're only seeing him for a few series. And then you're going to go, yeah, he's good enough. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to, you know, you think like Desmond Ridder. Remember like Desmond? That goes back to, why don't we give our quarterbacks any reps?
More time.
Our last two quarterbacks, think about this. We had one series for Ridder, right? Basically
right.
2 years ago.
That's
I know,
right.
It was a sore subject. And then basically the same last year for Michael Penix. I thought we were going to see Michael Penix Jr. all over the place. But it's almost like, and we have to ask Coach Ra this one, where you're just not wanting to challenge Cousins because Cousins was in his bag that you drafted a quarterback. That goes back to him being under the impression there was no going to be a quarterback over his shoulder. So heaven forbid Penix shows out in three halves of football. So that's why maybe that's the reason the sample size was so small.
No, that's a good point. I don't know if we'll ever know, but it's valid. I mean, like, to think that Cousins was like, no, I'm playing, I'm good, I want to get more reps.
Because all we saw was the third string guy much of the preseason.
It really was. 404-726-0929. You guys can chime in on that. Interesting stuff there. And again, this is one of those things, guys, you know, we're going to be watching. There are always stories that happen around the NFL that take a life of their own. This is already one of them. And that's why right. we're talking about it, because some people feel exactly like RG3 feels. Other people say, they don't care about these other guys they drafted, Mike. Flacco's old. He'll be out of there, and this is going to be the Shedeur Sanders show.
And the thing is, you know, you get all of these conspiracy theorists out there, and I don't know. All right, if you really thought that Shedeur Sanders, all this stuff that started to happen in the week of the draft, it's like, wow, he may fall out of the first round. You and I were like, that sounds kind of incredible.
Yep.
We were incredulous to that. And then you get to, if you're the Cleveland Browns, why did you bother with Dylan Gabriel? All the things that happened, that makes even less sense. Now, look, this is where people get in their bag over it. There are multiple reports saying that at the combine, Shedeur apparently big time people or was disinterested in places apparently had no interest in going. And I don't know if they conspire with other GMs. Like a James Cagney, we'll stick it to the kid. Meh. Well, that's actually how John Mara talks, who owns the Giants. But anyway, it's just either way, why bother with Dylan Gabriel if you go back in the fifth and take him? I mean, you could. I don't understand that logic to make it one step harder, because in essence, then you just wasted a fifth round pick if you're the Cleveland Browns. Whatever you think of a fifth round pick.
Yeah, and that doesn't make sense either. Either way, it's going to be one of these fun stories that plays out, and how it plays out, I don't know if anybody knows how it ends. I mean, the happy ending is what? Shedeur Sanders is starting, and the Browns are winning, and it's, can you believe this? The other ending is the opposite of that. And, Mike, that means him not being on the team potentially and everybody saying, I told you so, he wasn't that good.
Right. Hey, one last nugget while we're getting ready for the NFL. We know next Wednesday is the schedule release. We do apparently find out Mondays and Tuesdays. There will be leaks of the international games. So stay tuned. There is a 1-in-4 chance that we would be playing in Berlin against the Indianapolis Colts. And I'd be curious to see if we're going to be that team.
Yeah. There are six international games?
Yeah, the Chargers. Chargers in Sao Paulo week one. The Colts are in Berlin. Dolphins are playing in Madrid. That's one I'm kind of interested in if we have a bye week. Steelers are in London, and the Jaguars, Browns, and Jets also in the UK and London.
Madrid's cool. That'd be a fun spot.
Right.
Like that would be cool.
That was one of my favorite spots. I told you, we went to the Barcelona race for F1. Went to a bullfight day. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
I know some people thought, oh, that's terrible. Once you can figure out how it works, it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now I get why Hemingway dug it. But anyway, we'll find out maybe, and Berlin would be, I think, intriguing for a lot of Falcon fans.
All right, man. Coming up, we're going to have, No Man's on the way. Also in the 4 o'clock hour, we have to discuss the latest with Nick Saban, and we will. It's Dukes and Bell. It is Dukes and Bell. What's going on with Nick Saban? We're going to tell you coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Also, you're going to hear from all three of our newest rookies with the Atlanta Falcons. Now, Mike and I had a chance to have on Jalen and James Pierce the day after the draft. We were up at Flowery Branch. And with rookie camp going on, just the timing of things today, we got a chance to grab all three guys on the phone. And if you missed the first hour, it was action-packed. But learning about these guys, man, and you'll hear those interviews coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, so stay tuned. If you miss them, please download the app, the Odyssey app, and you can rewind that way and check it out. All right, it's time to get to Yeah Man, No Man.
All right, guys, welcome to the afternoon. How y'all doing today,
man? Hey, man.
Good stuff, man. Love hearing you guys chop it up with these Falcon rookies, man. So great stuff there, man. Let's get into it, man. I want you guys to hear from Stephen A. Smith because we've kind of been talking about this. You even touched on it just not too long ago, Mike, about, you know, we hate to use the word softness.
They're soft.
But
this generation is just soft in the NBA. I'll say it.
And, you know, hearing Stephen A. said what he had to say, I kind of agree. So let's check this out.
They're getting guard play in Indiana. Donovan Mitchell needs help, period. Mm-hmm. Because whether it's Ty Jerome, whether it's Strus or somebody else, I mean, listen, they're not point guards, okay? He needs some help in that backcourt. Now, you missed four straight games, Darius Garland. I mean, damn, you got all offseason to heal. Somehow, some way, I mean, you're on the brink of elimination. I mean, you got to get out there. You got to find a way. Limp your ass out there no matter which way you got to do it. I don't give a damn. All right? Find a way. Find a way. Pad the toe, wear an extra size shoe. You know, do something. But you got to get out there.
Yeah, he's been dealing with a toe injury. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's a real profile in courage, Carl. I mean, as we like to say, we were just talking about Willis Reed the other day.
We were.
I mean, yeah, man, nut up. I'm with Stephen A., man. Come on.
Womp, womp. Your team is counting on you. I mean, look, Cleveland's on the brink too while we're talking about this.
Right.
I mean, we can talk about the Celtics and the blowing 220-point leads. Cleveland better wake up, and they need him to be a part of that. So the Curry thing, by the way, he did speak to the media today. He said it's tricky, quote, the hamstring, and he won't rush it. But we already know he's going to miss at least three games.
But the good news is they've already, you could argue, yeah, you want to win as many as possible. When you steal a game on the road, split the road, you take over home court advantage, so, and then hope that he just heals. Because, again, he's getting everything hyperbaric chamber and everything else that, you know, we don't get.
Yeah, right. I think he'll be fine. But this Garland thing, it's going to be a mess if he doesn't play.
Yeah, and that's the issue. I mean, you're literally going, because the problem now is you're going to Indiana.
Right.
So you can legitimately wake up tomorrow in a 0-3 hole.
And you're done.
And you're done.
You're not coming out.
What are you saving it for? And again, I mean, oh, toe ligament? Okay, you got all off season. You can take, you know, then you get to take November off.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, it's just kind of the NBA way anyway. Get that thing fixed around Labor Day.
And like Stephen A. said, I mean, wear some extra padding, extra socks. Do what you got to do. I mean,
right.
Even if you're hopping around and you're just a decoy. Like, even if you're just a decoy, get on the court, man.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. This is the issue, though. And when we go there, by the way, I get it. You know, Gen Z hasn't yet. They're not quite there. This is more of the generation, Mike, that we always kind of make fun of,
yeah,
right?
We call Gen P.
Well, the millennials, though, are the ones that we're talking about. That's the generation we're talking about. The Gen Zs, they're not even there yet. They're not there. I feel like when we bring this up, though, that, you know, everybody gets all in their bag. It's the facts. Guys just played hurt more. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that now.
Yeah.
And it by is, the way, yeah. These guys are making triple the amount of money those guys are making.
It is kind of weird. It's a bit of a crossover to your point, Carl, because Gen Z, they say, I'm looking this up, and this is what AI says, individuals born between 97 and 2012. Right. So you do have some crossover, some guys that are in the league now under the age of 25 that are there. But, yeah, I'm with Carl. It's just – It's the playoffs. I mean, we know about load management and all this, and it sucks. Yeah, your toe hurts, and you have a hard time pushing up, but you got to be on the floor. Everything Stephen A. said, they're mugging Donovan Mitchell. You need a pressure release valve. So yeah. Even if you're at 50%, you're going to provide something they're not getting.
Exactly.
But to me, that's weak. And Cleveland, a blue-collar town like Cleveland, will not let him forget about that.
No, they definitely won't. All right, let's go to my next one here. So Pat McAfee had Heather Dinnage on yesterday. They were talking about, the committee there and voting on, you know, whether or not they're going to make some changes to the rules for getting into, you know, seeding for the playoffs,
okay,
right?
Okay.
And Pat McAfee just flat out said, which I agree, he was like, basically, he called them out, called them chumps. They're scared to, you know, do anything, basically. But I wanted to ask you guys, because I do feel like you got to have a change, especially because the biggest issue I felt last year was the strength of schedule component of all
this,
right?
Didn't seem to matter.
It didn't matter. And if it's going to matter, then in my opinion, you know, these power conferences, you got to get rid of, and it's unfortunate for these small schools, but you got to get rid of the paycheck games. And you got to replace those games with non-conference opponents,
with
but
juice.
They got to be right. of one of the other power conferences. And I just feel like that's going to be the only way. So I really want to get your thoughts on that. Is that going to be the best way to address the strength of schedule component of this?
Well, I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, the SEC's been pushing for, what, 9 games forever, right?
Well, the fans want it. The commissioner won't give it because it's the free milk and a cow. They want more money from ESPN. Now ESPN says they want it. Well, you're going to have to cough it up. You're going to have to add about $250 million to your deal, because to get that extra week of quality play, you got to pay for it.
And if they do that, to your point, you only strengthen your schedule by playing a tougher SEC opponent than going to a lesser conference that's not a Power Four now.
Right.
So to me, the answer is pretty easy. To Mike's point, though, how they get there and what that money looks like is why there's been the holdup. But I do agree. The only way, and I've always said this, the strength of schedule doesn't matter early because everybody gets all crazy and like, I can't believe they beat this team. It matters late. Like, Georgia got the push last year with the hardest schedule, I thought, in college football, late. When it was time for those final rankings to come out and we knew they're going to be a part of the playoff, what's this look like? That's when they got the push, when they said, hey, they've been to Ole Miss, they played Alabama, but they didn't get that when they played Alabama. And everybody's like, well, they just played Alabama. There's still too much of the schedule to play, but to answer your question, that's the way you answer. That's the way right. You got to fix it.
And Indiana's schedule was crap. We talked about that at length last year. So to me, and again, the seedings, the fact that Boise was a 3-seed, that made no sense.
Right.
You know, and again, like Arizona State, a lot of folks, see, that's what's cool about it. Sometimes you can surprise the critics because no one expected Arizona State to do what they did. You know, certainly they looked pretty darn good. They gave Texas everything they could handle here. It saved, you know, for Quinn Ewers making that big play at the end of the game. They might have won it. But I'm with you. Strength of schedule. I mean, this year, Carl, Georgia, they're going to start with Marshall, Austin Peay, and then right before they play Tech, it's Charlotte. So, and I go back to, you know, as a booster, I pay for season tickets down in Tally. I want to see the best opponent possible. I want to see the big games. I love that Clemson is going to LSU. That's balls, okay? I mean, Florida State played LSU 2 years in a row, back-to-back, New Orleans and Orlando. I want those kind of big games. I love the fact. Now, Florida State, Carl, may get greased by Alabama. But I'd rather let's take the chance and roll the dice and, you know, play some directional school, which generally beats Florida State anyway.
Yeah. Look, more of this is going to happen as we move towards an expanded playoff, because they're not going to have a choice. Mm-hmm. But we're not there yet, right? Mm. But when we get to the expanded playoff, new TV money, this is what it's going to happen.
Yeah, and 9 is where it's a joy. I mean, I just wish SEC would have done it on their own initiative, but there's no reason to, and like the commissioner's no nitwit until ESPN's going to give it to you.
All right, last one for it. I know you guys are going to touch on Coach Saban, so I won't ask you to dive too much into it, but can he be the one? Can he be the one to save, or if save is the right word, but put in motion and get this thing under wraps when it comes down to the NIL and transfer portal? Look, do you think he can be the one?
I do think that most coaches will agree with Saban's opinions about what is wrong and what needs to be fixed. I think the hard part is going to be to getting, again, the congressional help he needs to instill this across the country. You can tell me all you want, him and Kirby on the same page. That's great. Georgia going to change their laws? Is Alabama going to change their laws? Is Florida going to change their laws? That's the hard part. But I'll say this. If there's anybody who can, it's Saban. Because everybody respects him.
Well, one thing for certain, I don't want anybody who's a current athletic director on this college football playoff committee. That's another thing. I mean, remember, you and I used to joke around, but who the heck are these people? You know, Condoleezza Rice. Hell, I'd rather have her than somebody who's got a vested interest in the Big Ten having an extra team in this thing. So I just felt that, you know, there's got to be some objectivity. So, yes, you can have a former athletic director. You may say an agenda is still at play, but it beats having somebody who's actually in it. Because to Day-Day's point, to start the conversation, they did not value strength of schedule. It was woefully inadequate. It didn't make any sense when they first dropped the first college football playoff rankings all the way through to the end.
Yeah.
All right, man. That's all I got, guys. Appreciate you.
Good stuff, man. I know we were talking about this off the air. I just, you know, the conference schedule, who's the first one? The Big 12 was the first one to make it. Everybody plays everybody.
Everybody
round robin.
Yes.
Which is cool. And the Big 10 then jumped in with it. So, and we say all the time, yesterday we were talking about those coaches' rankings, you know, where James Franklin and those guys rank. It's like, you know, at least you know Penn State is going to play Michigan and they're going to play Ohio State every year. That's part of it. That's like, you know, Georgia, the fact that, you know, when they play, you know, Tennessee, when, you know, again, it's not Georgia's fault that Tennessee didn't have their S together for a while. Now they kind of do. Florida's been out there for a while. Now Florida's kind of slowly getting it back under Billy Napier. But the strength of schedule for the SEC should always be that number one and should always be heavily weighted for them. We're not being homers, Carl. It's just, remember when Georgia played? Who was playing Texas and Auburn? I mean, there's just like a run of games that there was nobody that had anything like it on their schedule anywhere in the Big Ten,
yeah,
for instance.
Yeah, and I think it helps. This is why a two-loss SEC team, you know, if you've got three of those two-loss teams, they all probably should be in the college football playoff because of the run that we're talking about. All right, man, it's Dukes and Bell. We're going to get into some more college stuff coming up, including Nick Saban being a co-chair for President Trump's college football commissioner. All right, what's that mean? We'll dive into that and much more coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.